collaboration, we don't want it. If this is democracy, then you can keep it.
I'm really frustrated. I feel like the democratic process is being completely overridden.
This incorporates aspects of military power and economic power. And if you speak about economic power, you have to talk about that which fuels the economy, and that is oil.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Monday, March 31st, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Former UN weapons inspector, former Marine Scott Ritter says the U.S. will lose this war with Iraq. A Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter expelled from Iraq by the Pentagon for reporting that the U.S. is having to rethink its strategy. And a 27-year-old peace activist visited a children's hospital bombed by the U.S. military. All those stories and more on today's Peace Watch. But first, these news headlines.
With headlines for Free Speech Radio News, I'm Jonica Lafis. Speaking before a pro-Israel lobbying group, Secretary of State Colin Powell issued an additional warning to Iraq's neighbors Syria and Iran to stop supporting terrorism. The secretary's comments yesterday follow Friday's accusation by Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld that Syria is sending military supplies into Iraq. Syrian officials have denied that either equipment or volunteer fighters are passing through their country. Today, Syrian Foreign Minister Farouk al-Sharaa told Syrian's parliament that they have a national interest in the expulsion of the invaders from Iraq. The Guardian of London is reporting that three British soldiers are being sent home after objecting to the number of civilian deaths in the war. The three soldiers may face a court-martial and are reported to be seeking legal advice. British Ministry of Defense officials said they could not comment on any individual cases and said they had no evidence that the soldiers had refused to fight. Iraqi Foreign Minister Mohammed Saeed al-Sahaf claimed today that Iraqi forces killed 43 U.S. and U.K. soldiers in the past 36 hours and destroyed 13 coalition tanks. The latest report from the U.S. Defense Department puts the total number of U.S. casualties at 42 dead, 7 captured, and 17 missing. The mobilization to defend affirmative action starts tomorrow with marches beginning at the Supreme Court. Reem Khatouda in Washington, D.C., reports on two University of Michigan cases that are critical to race relations in the United States.
Thousands of churchgoers, high school and college students, and others from across the U.S. will march through the streets of Washington, D.C. to the U.S. Supreme Court tomorrow, demanding that the High Court upholds affirmative action in the University of Michigan cases. These two cases represent a turning point in regards to race relations and for our entire society. Mishonda Baldwin, the national chair of the National Black Law Students Association, sketched a plan of action to reclaim the space for people of color beyond the hearing on Tuesday.
America will have us believe that we need to be individuals, but that's not the spirit that we come from. The spirit of Harriet to go back to the South to free people, that's the spirit of a sense of community that although I'm free, if you're not free, then none of us are free. We have to stop being excited about being the first or being the second black this or that. And we need to understand that leadership is really about getting in the trenches. And when you get in the trenches shoulder to shoulder with those who truly need the help, your collective unconsciousness of the entire group will rise. We need to start pointing out the inconsistencies of our leaders.
The mobilization to defend affirmative action will start by a teach-in today at Howard University, followed by a march and a sleepover near the Supreme Court. On Tuesday, all protesters will converge on the Supreme Court for a rally at 9 a.m., an hour before the court hearings. At noon, a march will take all to Lincoln Memorial. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Reem Khatouda.
President Hugo Chavez of Venezuela ordered an airstrike on bordering territories of Colombia after Colombian paramilitaries crossed the border and attacked Venezuelan military. Pablo Ramon reports from Caracas.
Late last week, Colombian paramilitaries crossed the border into Venezuela, where they were met by the Venezuelan military. After Colombian paramilitaries fired upon the Venezuelan forces, President Hugo Chavez of Venezuela ordered an airstrike that bombed the area. The paramilitaries were forced back into Colombia. Later in his presidential talk show, Chavez said that neither paramilitaries, rebels, nor the Colombian armed forces had any authorization to be on Venezuelan territory. This was after Venezuelan Vice President José Vicente Rangel stated that Colombia offers impunity to paramilitary groups. According to international human rights organizations, Colombian paramilitaries are responsible for more than 80% of the human rights violations that occur in Colombia. Earlier this month, the Venezuelan government said that it would add more troops to the already 5,000 stationed at the Colombia-Venezuela border. Chavez also mentioned that Álvaro Uribe Vélez, president of Colombia, called him to set up a meeting to try and resolve border conflicts. This is Pablo Ramon reporting from Caracas, Venezuela.
Three U.S. Marine soldiers were killed today when their helicopter crashed in southern Iraq. Olaf Arawati reports from Dubai.
Al Jazeera News satellite station reported Monday that three U.S. Marine soldiers were killed when their helicopter crashed in southern Iraq. The station's report said it was still unknown if the U.S. chopper crashed alone or was gunned down by Iraqi fire. According to the latest Pentagon report, 37 U.S. soldiers were killed in the war on Iraq. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Olaf Arawati in Dubai, the United Arab Emirates.
From Community Radio KGNU in Boulder, Colorado, for Free Speech Radio News, I'm Jonaki Lafis.
You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. U.S. commanders in the field announced yesterday there would be a 4 to 6 day operational pause in the advance towards Baghdad while U.S. forces were rearmed, refitted, and resupplied, although the Pentagon insisted there would be no overall halt in the campaign. Enemy resistance has been a factor, yet when Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Peter Arnett said as much in an interview he gave on Iraqi TV, he was expelled by the Pentagon and fired by NBC. During the interview, which Arnett says was analytical in nature, he said the American-led coalition's initial plan for the war had failed because of Iraq's resistance. Arnett called the interview a misjudgment and apologized. Three wounded British soldiers described yesterday how they survived a terrifying attack by an American anti-tank aircraft that killed one of their troops and destroyed two armed vehicles. One of the survivors criticized the American pilot for showing, quote, no regard for human life, unquote, and accused him of being a cowboy who had gone out on a jolly. In the 11 days since the invasion of Iraq, two open air markets have been bombed by American and British planes. 20 people, including 11 children, were killed when a nighttime missile attack struck a farm near Baghdad, according to relatives quoted in Agence France-Presse. And a hospital for sick children was bombed last Wednesday. Over the weekend, members of the Human Shield Project from Voices in the Wilderness left Baghdad en route to Amman, Jordan. Their rapid escape was sidetracked when their vehicle overturned and they rushed to a local hospital for treatment of their wounds and learned firsthand of the bombed children's hospital. Peace Watch spoke with Shane Claiborne of Voices in the Wilderness today about his experience in Baghdad and their hasty exit from the war-torn city.
I spent a lot of my time visiting hospitals with people who were victims of the bombings, many of them children and families. And out of that, we also went to visit homes and public places, a market, a school, all of these were bombed. And so we had a human face to that, but we also saw the physical ruins from the bombing. So that's how I spent a lot of my days doing that.
It seems as though the civilian casualties are rising in Baghdad with reports of the bombing of a second market on Friday. Reports that that some of the taxi cab drivers are being shot if they refuse to respond to orders by the U.S. troops. Also reports that a hospital was bombed. And you say that you spent some time at the hospitals. Can you verify that a children's hospital was actually bombed recently, I believe on last Wednesday?
Not in Baghdad, but in Rutba, right?
Yes.
Yes. Well, on the way out of Baghdad, we were driving and wreckage from the bombing, cars that were bombed. We saw an ambulance that was bombed, buses, and the streets were just strewn with shrapnel and downed light posts, and you know, and we ended up hitting that, and we had a flat tire that blew out, and we were going quite fast because it was a very treacherous road. We were going quickly, and our car spun off the road, went into a ditch, and immediately Iraqi people stopped and took us into the hospital nearby. And when we got there, the doctors began treating us, and one of the first things that they said was, 3 days ago, the U.S. bombed our children's hospital. then they pointed it out to us and showed us. We saw the hospital that was bombed in Rutba. It was their children's hospital. And yet they continued, as they're saying that, you know, they continued to take care of us. And they said, but we know that the American people are not the American government. You know, they said, we hear, the doctor said to us, he said, here, Christian, Muslim, Iraqi, American, we are all brothers, and we're all humans, and so we'll take care of you. And they took us in and took such good care of us and released us. They wouldn't even take our money. But their only request was tell the world that the U.S. bombed our hospital.
And were you able to actually see the hospital that was bombed, the children's hospital? Were there children in the hospital at the time? Did they speak of any casualties?
We did see the hospital. And, you know, to be honest, we had two people that we weren't sure whether or not they were going to live from this car accident. So we were quite distracted. We weren't the best, you know, war crime monitors at the time. We saw the hospital. We weren't able to go in or to ask too many questions. But we did see it, and we were, you know, we hoped that other people would follow up on this story and get some of the information. So we're not sure of all the specifics of how many people died or anything like that.
Who were the people in your group that were injured severely?
Well, Cliff Kendi, actually right now I'm looking at one of the folks from the hospital who has come to our hotel room at 10 o'clock at night and is washing his head. He had a very severe head injury. Another member of our group had broken ribs, a broken collarbone, just a number of injuries, and he's still in the hospital. Everybody in our car was injured. Our car, two other folks had head injuries, and my shoulder was sort of dislocated and have it in a sling right now. So, yeah. Everybody in the car was injured.
And these injuries were from the car accident, not from any bombing or shelling.
That's right. It was from the car accident, but I mean that was, you know, it was related to the fact that there was missile. You know, we were running over the ruins of war, and we, you know, were going so fast because as we were driving out, we saw bombings. Like within a kilometer of us, there was there were U.S. bombings that were happening, and so we were driving really quickly. It was scary.
Shane, one of the reports that I read suggested that perhaps the U.S. military was targeting some of these sites because there was concern that the Iraqis were using them as sort of military outposts disguised in places like hospitals or markets or farms. What can you tell us about that, given the strategies that we know that the Iraqi people are using to defend themselves from this invasion? Is it possible that they are using some of these sites that would be considered civilian operations or installations
right.
as military outposts?
Well, I really believe that if the Iraqi government were using these sites for military purposes, we would have seen some of the you know, leftovers from that when we visited the site. A lot of times we were visiting sites within hours and like even the same day that they were bombed or at least the next day. And so these were sites. I mean, one of them that we saw was the middle of a public marketplace that there was no way that it was, you know, used for any sort of military purposes. Homes and the market, cars were destroyed. People were killed in the cars. I asked somebody, where is the nearest anything dealing with the military? And the guy said, at least 10 kilometers from here. I mean, homes. We visited so many homes that were hit, and there's, you know, no way that those were being used. The people that were taken to the hospital were children and families that we saw. There was another school that was hit, there was nothing military about the sites that we visited. There may be others, you know, but I'm just telling you what I saw,
mm-hmm.
and the people that I saw that were injured, it was over and over. It was children, and it was like the one of the first people we met within 10 minutes of the first bombing. The doctor took us into the hospital, and he said, "I want to show you the first target of the U.S. bombing." And he said, "This is her. Her name is Doha. She's 4 years old, and she was hit within 10 minutes of the first day's bombing, and one of the missiles had hit her in the back and broken her back." So those were the targets that we saw.
And Shane, why are you leaving Baghdad? Were you forced out by the Iraqi officials, or was the war becoming too intense, or are you just leaving on your own accord?
I was not forced out. I'm leaving because it was a very hard decision to leave. I think it's very important for us to continue to accompany the Iraqi people there and be with them. I also believe that we've been entrusted with a tremendous truth that needs to get out. And so I'm going to speak and to share and to tell the story of what we have seen, because I truly believe if the American people are to see the people that we met and to hear these stories, we can't help but say this is a senseless war. And as one of the fathers in the hospital said, "What kind of liberation would do this to our children?" He said, "This is not liberation. This is an attack. If this is liberation, we don't want it. If this is democracy, then you can keep it." And that's the message that I want to send, is that surely the Iraqi people have suffered from the regime, but they've suffered so much from the sanctions, and now are suffering from another attack that's destroying their families and their children. And over, the mothers and the fathers lifted their children's faces and said, "Show the American people this face. Tell them this story." And I believe that could lead us to more imaginative solutions and end the suffering that we see right now.
27-year-old Shane Claiborne of Voices in the Wilderness speaking to us from Amman, Jordan. He's heading back home now to Philadelphia. A man who says he knows intimately the Iraqi terrain and the Saddam Hussein government, having fought in the first Gulf War, predicts the U.S. will lose this war. Former U.N. Chief Weapons Inspector Scott Ritter, also a former Marine Intelligence officer, says the policies advocated by the Bush administration to liberate the Iraqi people will not work. During an interview today with Peace Watch, Ritter further explained his skepticism.
The United States has set forward strategic objectives for this war: the liberation of Iraq, the removal from power of Saddam Hussein's regime, and the installation of a democratic form of government to replace Saddam. Now, in order to do this, we have to start with, at square one, which is to liberate Iraq. And we have chosen as the vehicle to achieve this liberation a military invasion. Clearly, if you're going to liberate Iraq, you need to do so successfully by destroying the Iraqi military in as rapid a fashion as possible, while reducing the number of civilian casualties so as to generate a true sense of welcoming for the American liberator. And it seems that we have not succeeded in this initially. We have failed to understand and respect the depth of patriotic feeling, nationalistic feeling that exists in Iraq. Yes, Saddam Hussein is a brutal dictator, but he is an Iraqi dictator, and the Iraqi people, at least based upon my experience, are willing to deal with this devil in their own way. Mm-hmm. They are not willing to have an outside power, especially the United States, which has spent the last decade starving them to death through United Nations-imposed sanctions, which have been sustained by American political activity. Mm-hmm. 1.5 million Iraqis have perished. We've taught generations of Iraqis to hate us, and that hate is manifested today through the resistance. So what I've said is that while we may win this war militarily, meaning that eventually we can assemble the proper balance of a mix of military power to crush the Iraqi resistance, in the end, we will not be able to impose an American dictated government on the people of Iraq, and ultimately we will meet the same fate that met the Soviets when they invaded Afghanistan. Mm. Whether it takes a month, a year, or 8 years, we will lose this war, and the American military will be withdrawn from Iraq in defeat.
There have been reports of civilian casualties rising, and it's at an incredibly early stage of this invasion. A second market was hit on Friday. A hospital in Rutba was bombed on Wednesday. That's according to American peace activists who actually went to the hospital seeking medical attention. Taxicab drivers are, according to the Washington Post, being shot if they fail to respond to orders to stop because of an incident where a suicide bomber used his cab to attack four U.S. troopers. Some 20 people were killed on a farm, according to Agence France-Presse. It seems as though civilian casualties, despite the administration's stated intention to try and be as careful about hitting civilians or attacking civilians, is incredibly high, even at this early stage of the game. I'm wondering what your thoughts are about that.
Well, my first thought is that, you know, we Americans, one of the things that we do to legitimize this war is to say that 9/11 changed everything. And we remember to that horrible day when the Twin Towers fell, the Pentagon was hit, another jetliner went down into a field in Pennsylvania. And we recall as nearly 3,000 of our fellow citizens' lives were snuffed out in a span of around 100 minutes. What we need to realize is that we are inflicting a 9/11 on Iraq and the people of Iraq on a daily basis. The horrific bombardment of their cities, the strafing of their highways, the shelling of their fields. You know, this is war, and we need to understand that that's what war is about. You cannot responsibly speak of waging a war that limits civilian casualties when you are waging a war of aggressive occupation. There is no sea for the American fish to swim in, to paraphrase Mao. The sea is an Iraqi sea. The fish swimming are Iraqi resistors, and it's the Americans who are caught up in this. And what this means is that we cannot selectively target the military. The Iraqis are not going to put their forces out in the desert in the open for us to conveniently pick them off. They are fighting to win, and to win they will suck us into their towns. They will defend their towns, house by house, street by street, and these towns are filled with Iraqis. Now, some of these Iraqis are caught in the middle and would prefer not to be there. Many of these Iraqis are patriotic citizens who will facilitate the defense of their town. And as a result, we're going to have to destroy the town to save the town. That's something we experienced in Vietnam. It's something the Russians experienced in Chechnya. They experienced it in Afghanistan. It is the Iraqi civilian who's going to pay the price. And basically what's taking place is military murder. And it's murder of thousands of Iraqi civilians. And this number will climb dramatically in the days, the weeks to come, as we take the fight to the urban environment, the urban battlefield that the Iraqis want to wage war on.
Some observers and analysts of this war have said that the real reason behind it are the oil wells that are nestled in the ground, in the soil in Iraq, and that there was a plan that's been afoot for a number of decades, a Pax Americana plan, that actually outlines a very sophisticated policy on the part of neoconservatives to actually redefine the Middle East and install democracy, to take control of the oil fields in order to support the U.S. economy. I gather from what you said that you don't put much stock in that.
Well, I believe that, you know, this is about American imperial hegemony, plain and simple, as set forth in the Bush National Security Strategy document that was published last fall. This incorporates aspects of military power and economic power. And if you speak about economic power, you have to talk about that which fuels the economy, and that is oil. So I believe oil definitely has a role to play in this. But I believe that it is ideology that is leading and that oil will follow. You know, there are ways to influence the Persian Gulf oil market short of invading Iraq. You know, the United States has always found a way to exert its influence on that region to get oil prices where it was economically viable for us, and to speak of sustainable access to these oil markets. and we didn't need to invade Iraq to do this. I believe that, you know, any sound businessman would reject war as a model of promoting business interests in the Middle East. That, you know, what we have here are ideologues who are seeking, A, to deny oil revenues to Saddam Hussein, and then to leverage the American occupation of Iraq into pressure on neighboring oil-producing regions to generate, you know, promote democracy and to bring under control these oil markets. But I don't believe this is a cabal of American oil businessmen sitting there saying, aha, we need to occupy the Middle East. I actually think they think that this is destabilizing and they would prefer a different policy. This is about ideologues who are seeking literally global domination.
Scott Ritter, now you're a former United Nations chief weapons inspector. You're a former military man. What are your thoughts when you're sitting there, if you're sitting there watching the footage of this war on your television set? You've been to Iraq. You know Saddam Hussein and what he's capable of doing. What are your thoughts as you're watching this whole thing unfold?
Well, I take this war very personally, not because of any special understanding with the Iraqi people. I have a great deal of respect for them and for their culture, and I respect them as human beings. But my opposition to the war is not derived from that. I look at the images with an immense sorrow because, as a former Marine officer who had the honor and privilege of commanding young Marines in peace and in war, I recognize how fragile they are and just how precious they are to our country. And I've been in opposition to this war because we're going to be throwing away their lives in a failed mission. We are going to be needlessly sacrificing these wonderful Americans. We're going to be taking honorable people and have them waste themselves in a dishonorable cause. Understand that you can support the troops and be against this war. In fact, if you do support the troops, it's your duty to be against this war. You know, look at the pieces of paper right now with the names of dead Marines and soldiers on it, and understand that every day we can take off this war, that's fewer names that are going to end up on that piece of paper. Imagine how empty the Vietnam Memorial would be if we had stopped that war in 1965 or 1966. You know, don't sit back if you're an American citizen and think that because our troops are engaged, we have to blindly support the leadership that got them involved in this war. That if you're truly loyal to the troops, the best thing you can do is exercise every aspect of your American citizenship to bring a quick end to this war and get our boys and girls home so that they can be with their families and not have their names stenciled on a wall. I've always wanted weapons inspections in Iraq, not just for the disarmament aspect of it, but because I recognize that as long as inspectors were working in Iraq viably, we wouldn't need to go to war, and that was the best way I could think of to preserve the lives of my fellow Marines. And now that I see them engaged in combat, and I see them dying, and I see down the road that more of them will be dying, I'm stricken by, you know, the utter sadness of it all, because these are America's finest. They've honored us all by putting on the uniform to defend us, and we have put them in a situation where they will sacrifice their lives in a cause that definitely is not worthy of that sacrifice.
It must be frustrating to see the poll results, if one believes the poll results, that the majority of Americans support this war.
Well, I would say the majority of Americans don't have the foggiest idea of what war is and don't know what it is they're supporting. I blame the American people for just being ignorant across the board. You know, to allow your sons and daughters to go off and wage war in a foreign land without even beginning to try and understand the nature of this war they're waging, to fail to exercise your obligation in a democracy to hold those whom you elect to higher office accountable for what they do in your name. It's a stunning failure of American democracy across the board. We have a dereliction of duty from the president all the way down to the individual American citizen and everything in between. This war is reflective of that dereliction of duty, of that collapse. We are no longer a democracy of citizens. We've forgotten how to exercise citizenship a long time ago. We're a democracy, or we democracy in quotes, of consumers who have allowed ourselves to be pushed by corporate interests and government. And it saddens me, and frankly, it sickens me.
Former UN Chief Weapons Inspector Scott Ritter. You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. We'll be back in a moment.